racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Tickets to the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival are on sale now. New York's premier three-day racing festival returns to historic Belmont Park June 6th through 8th. Buy tickets today and enjoy trackside reserve seats or enhance your experience with one of our premium hospitality packages to make this an unforgettable event. Grandstand admission starts at $15 and three-day festival passes are also available. Buy now at Ticketmaster.com or visit BelmontStakes.com. The Belmont Stakes, where champions are crowned.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Porchbills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9
3-8-4-6-4-3. Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
You have my heart, and we'll never be worlds apart. Maybe in magazines, but you still be my star.
We're back at the races, about 12 minutes to the top of the hour. Brad Cox is going to join us, as well as Steve Crist. Right now, Andy Serling of the New York Racing Association. Andy, good morning.
Oh, I'm good. You know, those two guests coming on, I don't think I can be on for more than 5 minutes because you wouldn't want to take any time away from them.
Well, Steve said after 10:30 because, of course, he's not an early riser. So I've got a good kind of him. An open window.
Good for him. I'm sure he would be happy with a call at 11:52.
Oh boy. Let's get right into the
Let's talk
the
about
weekend.
The royal baby. Are we going to talk about the royal baby?
What they named the
you
baby?
You probably
I
have not
here.
Covered.
I haven't. What I haven't.
What? Steve Bick? Whatever. What's their last name?
Windsor something something.
Did you have to lay a price to bet the sex of the child? Because if so, it's good to be a bookmaker, right?
I know that they do bet on all that, right? They bet on the name, they bet on all that stuff.
For sure, yeah. Yeah, I think Steve makes a big price. But
I like
you know.
That, yeah. I had fun, actually. Was that last week or the week before when we talked about James Scully, who I didn't realize was James Scully III, and I said, please
kind
don't.
Disrespectful the first two, don't you think?
Well, I said, please don't saddle your child with James Scully IV because I
know a fourth.
Do you really?
Yeah.
I can't think of a fourth I've come across.
I know a fourth. Went to college with. I heard it from the other day. Yeah.
How funny! Well, Andy, anyway. I'm going to turn it right over.
For, and, what, 14 seconds about the... It's not over yet. It's Tuesday.
No, it's
even I'm not going to tweet about it anymore. But I have a question for people that think the horse shouldn't have come down. And I'm, as you know, I'm not a result-oriented guy, which I think is important to this question.
Yeah.
If War of Will had gone down, and possibly there had been an ensuing situation, which was bad, would those people still say that they should have left Maximum Security up? And they can answer and say, well, it's not really the same because we know that War of Will wasn't good enough, and Lodi Express wasn't good enough, and Toddy Horse wasn't good enough. And I say, we don't really know that. We don't really know that War of Will wasn't compromised, making his move and getting severely interfered with. We don't know how that affected him. And, you know, you can listen to me, or you can listen to people like Todd Pletcher, who was very good on ESPN yesterday. But both he and Randy Moss were really good. We don't know how it affected him, because horses are affected differently.
Sure.
I've watched thousands and thousands of races in my life and spent a lot of time thinking about them. I'm going to say that I think it's very unfair to suggest, because you see horses give up after trouble sometimes. You see them get discouraged by things. So I'm going to say that since it's very hard to believe you would have heard too many people saying he should have stayed up had there been an accident, I'm not sure why this is different, because it's exactly the same thing that could have caused an accident, right? It was very fortunate that there wasn't one. So that's sort of my last word on it. I think they made the right call. I think the only complaint might be that, you know, they should have met the media. I absolutely am not going to argue with that. I imagine in retrospect, they probably feel like they should have too. I can't speak for them, but we could have handled that better. It's always good to take these opportunities to explain to as many people as possible, and especially when you're on that big a stage to do it. But I also think that we showed people that the system does work. And if the rules don't apply in the biggest races, why have them at all? Should we just have them for maiden claiming races? Should we just be adjudicating lower level races? Are there different rules for different sets of racing? Is that what we really want to say? I don't feel that way. And I think it's unfortunate, because he very, 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 very likely was going to win the race. Doesn't mean that War of Will might not have finished third had he not been fouled. I don't think anybody's really saying that War of Will would have won, but that doesn't mean that that horse should have stayed up. And it's the rules. And listen, to suggest that he shouldn't have come down because Country House, you know, I disagree. I know Andy feels this way, but I don't agree with him. There have been plenty of horses over time that finished second have been put up, and they've been legitimate DQs. It's very hard, and I think we have to be careful about telling stewards that they have to make these absolute decisions on affecting order of orders of finish. I think you get into a real slippery slope there. And I think you also have to the riders need to be given the right instructions, which what they can and can't do. Because the riders have a job, and that's to win. For owners, for bettors, and the riders are going to do what they can to win legally, and you can't knock them for that. So you can't send them mixed messages of what may or may not be allowable depending on what race it is. And so I think the right call was made. An absolutely unfortunate that it had to happen, but it did happen. And I don't think there's really, I don't have anything else to say about it. I respect whether people want to have their own opinions. I certainly have some smart friends that disagree with me, and that's fine. I'm good with that too. I'm pretty clear on this one.
You know, the other part of this, because I was thinking, you know, should I ask you, you know, who you thought ran well and so forth, and you know,
I think Game Winner ran the best race. I mean, the other thing is, right, who's the best race? I think Game Winner actually ran the best race of anybody here. So he didn't win. I mean, Gary West got to be the unluckiest owner in the game, at least for the moment, because not only did he get disqualified, but he ran at least the second best horse in Game Winner. So he really, really got lucky. It's not, you know, everybody's focusing on Maximum Security. Nobody's talking about Game Winner. And I don't want to hear about Joel taking Game Winner back. Roaster crushed him at the start. As we know, the start, especially in the Derby, can be very, very important. The best three races, ironically, were one run, in my opinion, and I've watched this race an awful lot. And David Argon and I did a podcast across the board if anybody wants to listen to our thoughts the next morning. I think that clearly the best three races were run by Maximum Security, Game Winner, and Tacitus. Now, ironically, for Belmont, he got placed first with the other horse, right? But there are variations where Tacitus wins the race. And Country House is the most fortunate because he just loved the slop. I don't believe the Country House we've seen on other races would have won this race, because he was really, of all the horses you could really see watching the replay, but he was really in the bridle and running the whole way. He was placed closer than he normally is. He was just running. And subsequently ran the best race he's ever run. But, yeah, I mean, you know, the whole thing, the best horse didn't win. I understand. The horse that finished first, I understand. The best horse doesn't win the Derby fairly often. It used to happen a lot more often. It doesn't happen as much these days. Normally Invasion ran the best race in 2013. I don't think you're going to find anybody, myself included, that's going to say that Shug and Orb weren't deserving winners. Norby Invasion had a lousy trip. It was unfortunate. But should they have placed him higher? Should every horse that we bet on in races, or every owner that has a horse that was best? It doesn't happen. It's horse racing. Things happen. There's a lot of vagaries in the game. Well, and one of them is that a horse can get disqualified for committing a foul. And he might have still been best.
And one of the things that's remarkable about this, I mean, as regular players, you know, we all kind of know and are having our own, you know, our own internal debates. But it's very interesting, Eddie, to watch the general public who seem fascinated by this. They're like, what went on here? I've had more people. It's like when you make that joke about, you know, somebody stopped you on the subway. I've had that already.
I do, because people do recognize me on occasion on the subway and will ask. Or people have asked me that my everyday life yesterday. Absolutely, people are asking. That's good.
It is.
It's great. Yeah. And the other thing I'll say about the best horse, you know, the answer to the mic question as well, this is one thing we can control. You can't place a horse first that finished fourth, whereas this horse finished first. I understand that, but I still think the rules have to apply to all horses within reason. I'm not saying if there's some minor infraction. But this nonsense that we have in this qualification, the Derby, yes, we've run 145 Derbies now, about 16 to 17 days of racing. Fortunately, we frequently go longer than that without disqualifications. And also Gate Dance was taken down from fourth. So we certainly go longer periods than that without horses coming down from first, thankfully. So it isn't that big a sample size. And when people say, oh, it's a rough rerun race, I can't recall an incident of this magnitude happening at that key a juncture.
Right. That part of it certainly fair.
Yeah. And with all due respect, I think it's important for people that train for these connections. You know, we all have to be careful about our own biases, you know. I imagine if this horse was owned by one of my good friends, it would be hard for me. I would try very hard to be, you know, open-minded, but I also would be honest about, you know, having a personal interest. In this case, I don't. I don't know the West at all. I don't know Jason Service at all. I like Luis Saez a lot. I think he's a terrific guy, a terrific young rider. I feel very badly for him. I've never found him to be even remotely reckless. I don't think that he did anything wrong here. Obviously, something bothered the horse, whatever it was. So I hope that nobody out there thinks that in any way he's to blame, because I certainly don't feel that way. I find him to be really not, you know, where there are somewhat reckless riders out there. I don't think we have a lot of them in New York, but he's not one of them.
Beyond Derby, and before we talk about the Belmont action from Saturday and Sunday, what else from Churchill struck you?
Matoli. I love Matoli. We've talked about Matoli for over a year, right? I mean, very sorry last year when he got hurt after the race at Pimlico. And he's a rare horse that's fulfilling what we had thought was the case, right? That he could really be the best sprinter in the country. You know, he was terrific. He showed that he didn't need the lead. I mean, obviously had the right outside post, but there was a horse that was sort of breathing down his neck outside of him too. And, you know, he could run a fast race going 7 furlongs without controlling on the front end. And distance didn't seem to be an issue, so onwards and upwards to Met Mile, where he's going to meet maybe the most impressive winner of the entire weekend in McKenzie. And, you know, Bob Baffert, you know, that the Met Mile, Bob understands the value of the Met, and I'm sure he's had this race penciled. It's perfect for McKenzie, and to cut him back for a mile and a 16th, and that's going to set up a great matchup on Belmont Stakes Day. So I'm very excited about that. And, you know, and let's face it, the Preakness is coming in about 10 minutes, but the Belmont will be a few weeks after that, and it's going to be a great day of racing. So looking forward to them. I thought they were the two most exciting horses. I was, you know, thrilled to see Digital Age do so well. Obviously, we've talked about him before. I'm a fan of his.
How did he go off at 8-1?
People, you're going to get different prices in those races than you get with smaller pools on normal days. And people didn't understand his race at Tampa the way we did, how well he ran. That this, you know, turf racing is difficult. And that's one of the reasons we always like turf racing, is that trips and pace dynamics and are much more important necessarily than final times, and why speed figures can be somewhat misleading in turf racing in ways they really aren't in dirt racing. So maybe that was it. I don't know. You know, I liked him, so it's not, you know, it seemed like the horse that ran 1, 2, 3 on paper were the three horses in the race.
Yeah, turned out.
You know, I thought they all would have been relatively short, similar price. I thought that Digital Age would be about 9-2. I thought he'd be the third choice of those three. I don't know how they made Social Paranoia 10-1 morning line, but there were a lot of real bonehead moves in the morning line. You know, Bricks, I'd rather see Bricks and Mortars keep rolling along. We'll see him in the Manhattan, I assume, on Belmont Day. And, you know, thrilled to see Bricks do well. Thrilled for Amos, Tom Amos, our friend, to win the with Serengeti Empress. Tom's done a great job with her, and Tom, unlike others in there, wanted to send a speed horse to lead. And particularly, I don't know why the connections made a decision they made with Motion to Motion. It's a horse who continually run good races, going to the front end. Whatever she would have done in here, she had no chance if she was rated. But Tom understands that you send speed horses to lead. You're not going to see Tom Amos rating speed horses. And there's a reason that Tom Amos has the highest win percentage of any trainer in history with 3,000 or more wins. One of them probably being he doesn't rate speed horses, right? So that was great. You know, I didn't bet her. I didn't expect her to win, but couldn't have been more thrilled for Tom. I can't think of much else. Oh, Newspaper Record, obviously losing was disappointing, but she didn't run terribly, and frankly, let's give the love to Concrete Rose that she deserves. I mean, she was sensational in that race. Jeez, mm-hmm. I mean, she really ran. So it's nothing wrong with a little competition, and we'll see if and how Newspaper Record bounces back from this. But she didn't run badly. She did run off a little bit early, and she still earned a buyer figure in the mid-80s, so let's not get too down on her. But for Concrete Rose, she keeps running like that, she's going to be a real threat, even if Newspaper Record's running her good races. So we'll see.
Well, meanwhile, Andy, beside Churchill, let's talk about the first multiple graded stake weekend at Belmont. And on Saturday, early on the card, Santa Monica, overwhelmed.
Yeah, unfortunately, weather obviously was the story in New York. It's just been incredible. Beautiful. I mean, outrageous how much it's rained, you know, since we went to Belmont. And that's just destroyed a lot of our racing. You know, in the two turf races, Santa Monica and the long shot, Chad Brown's from Europe, who didn't have much European form you could go on. That's why the horse went up at 20-1 or 18-1. Santa Monica was dominating. Nobody else ran a step. And she's a nice horse, but I think it was a lot to do with the fact that nobody ran at all in there. I don't want to criticize her, but she's a nice horse, but she's sort of proven that she is who she is. And she's competitive in all her races, but that was more probably about the turf course. And you could say the same thing. I mean, the other race, Robert Bruce, maybe a little bit close to the pace. You would have thought, I think a lot of us expected the horse who won to be involved in the pace with Dr. Edgar, being the horse that's been a speed overseas. I don't know. The horse did get left, but it was surprising that horse came from far back. You would have thought Robert Bruce might have run more like that, but he must not have handled the turf to have not finished the way he did. But we'll see. He's going to have to bounce back in his next start, which may well be the Manhattan. Depends, you know, if Chad Brown, what you think there's something else besides, the turf. And Nicodemus, Linda Rice. You know, we talked about this quite a bit on Talking Horses, that when Linda shows confidence with a horse like that, you can expect the horse to run well. And she was not at all discouraged by his mediocre performance in the Stymie. And it seemed that she clearly felt that one-turn races, mile, 7 furlongs, are better races for him. And she was aggressive and tried that race. So she got paid off. And, you know, as much as I respect Lynn, and I like to tease her and stuff, but I have a world of respect for her. Sometimes I wish she'd be more aggressive, but when she is aggressive with horses, it often pays off. And it did in that case. It was nice to see Mike Luzzi get a stake win, first time in a while. Prince Lucky, obviously, the big disappointment. I mean, you know, I don't know if Todd will feel it's the racetrack. He certainly had a good trip. It's not like he was, you know, embroiled in the pace or taking a lot of dirt. He was out in the clear, but maybe he just didn't handle the going. But he just didn't run a step in there, which is concerning because he run so well in those two races in Florida. Hopefully he's okay, because he could have, you know, the performance similar to the ones he'd been running in Florida, he would have been the third head in a very, very tough Met mile. We'll see if Todd feels it was a wet track and see if he can rebound in that mile or if it was something more than that.
Well, he stunk in the Sir Barton last year on a sealed slop.
Not at this level, right? I don't know. But he also was a significantly better horse this year than he was last year.
Agreed.
And this year he's starting to look like a grade one horse.
I agree.
But that's a fair point. You know, listen, I hope it was a wet track because he'd run so well in Florida, you'd like to see him come back. And God knows we could use some good horses this year.
Well, speaking of good horses, Come Dancing?
Well, Come Dancing is just terrific, right?
It's unbelievable.
Run the kind of figure she ran last time, but it was a wet track. And coming back to that last race, she was just dominant there. It's got a 103 buyer. And I thought the Pacific Wind really ran. And she just dusted her off like she's a gnat. And Pacific Wind may not be a top grade one quality horse, but she's a very good horse. And she just flicked her away like she was nothing when she came to her in the stretch.
Yeah,
she's good. Come Dancing. It's nice. It's nice to see Carlos Martin. You know, you want to see people who's, you know, doesn't. I may be friendly with people who are the top trainers of the game, but that doesn't mean that they need to have every good horse in the game. And I think that everyone would agree that it's good to see names you don't see that often. And in Carlos's case, it's nice to see Carlos doing well with that horse. She's a horse that's always had some promise, and now she's really fulfilling it. It's great to see. She and it just sets up a very good matchup with she and Midnight Bisu in the fifths.
Yep.
I don't know if Mott is, you know, planning to give a late another chance. We'll see. But if he is, we'll see her in there too and see if she can bounce back. And Monoy Girl seems to be MIA, huh?
Well, we're going to talk to Brad in a little bit.
Tell him we want the story. We want exactly when she's running. Because otherwise you'll have to have Sol on.
Happy to have Sol on. It was a quiet weekend. I think Sol only made four or five trips to the winner's circle.
I think he's involved with that horse that he's got to be involved in the horse that Dub has that won the stake, the Fort Marcy. Did he buy any horses in the stretch, or who was he involved in that won? Who was he involved? I don't remember.
He's in on two of those Asmussen runners.
Oh, she's a Julie?
Yes, and maybe Mia Mischief as well.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
And probably, now World of Trouble is Dub. I don't think, is he involved with her?
I don't think so.
Him?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so. All right. Well, Andy, you fulfilled your promise as well.
That means a lot to me, Steve. Thank you for allowing me to wake up before I came on the air.
It's our pleasure.
I don't want people to be complaining if I pick up the phone when I literally was just waking up, whenever that was.
Well, that was an hour ago. But Steve Crist, you may want to listen in because your longtime friend is joining us next.
And all I also want to get in the shower and run some errands.
Very good.
I can always call Steve and ask him how it went.
That's true. You can get you can get the direct answer.
I have
answer.
That option. See you
yes. later. We're also going to hear from Mark Cassie, who Mark wants to get his view of things out there because apparently, you know, someone said to Mark that Steve Bick says it was War of Wills' fault that it happened. That's not exactly what I said, folks.
Hard to imagine you said that.
No,
I didn't. Mark believes you said that either.
Well, he sent me a text asking me if I said it.
But that's because he didn't believe that you actually said it.
Well, he contributed. I mean, there's no doubt that he contributes to what transpires there. But that, listen, that's what we get. It's racing. There's horses.
I don't really agree with that because horses moving out a path or something. He had to move out because the other horse moved out in front of him, Steve.
I'm not convinced of that, but we'll let Mark adjudicate.
Whatever.
Steve Prist is with us, actually. Steve,
I'd rather talk about the royal baby. I'll let Steve go.
Thank you. Andy Serling, everybody. And, of course, we've got the Peter Pan coming up on Saturday at Belmont. Steve Prist joining us from the racing form, of course. Not currently officially, but emeritus-wise. Steve, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
We heard from Andy Beyer yesterday, who was so moved by the Derby that he went to the keyboard. And back in the pages of the Daily of the Washington Post, can we get you to do the same?
Oh, I don't think I'm going to come out of retirement for this, but it was great to see Andy's byline back in. And, you know, you see what a tough call this was when you've got the two Andys on different sides of the fence, which doesn't happen too often.
Good point. Well, let's get your take on, you know, what is going to obviously be, Steve, one for the ages in this, you know, this great race.
It really is. I'm uncomfortable with what happened and with the result. Personally, I got very, very lucky, and I benefited paramutually from the takedown. So I'm going to put that aside. But I feel a little guilty about it, like I got away with something, because I'm not sure that the horse should have come down. I think the only people who are dead wrong about this are people who say it was a no-brainer either way. It wasn't a no-brainer. It's a 51-49 judgment call. And, you know, you can think that they made the right or the wrong judgment. But it was very close, and I have sympathy for both points of view. There's no question that Maximum Security committed a foul. And there are some people who believe you commit a foul, you come down, that's the end of the story. I'm not entirely comfortable in that. Let's say Secretariat had brushed someone coming out of the gate en route to a 31-length victory in the Belmont. Do you want to take him down from winning the Triple Crown because he technically committed a foul coming out of the gate? I don't think anyone would say that you should do that. So there is always going to be judgment. That's why the stewards are given wide discretion and latitude. And, you know, we'll debate forever whether he should have come down because maybe Warrawell would have finished fourth if it hadn't happened. I'm not comfortable with taking down the winner of the Kentucky Derby for that much of a judgment call. I'm not comfortable with Country House being elevated into winning the Kentucky Derby. But it's a close call, whichever way you feel about it.
And that view, I mean, that's sort of where I was, too, immediately and subsequently. And Andy, you know, voiced that as well. So there's a lot of serious players, Steve, that are on both sides of this. It's fascinating, actually, from that standpoint.
It really is. I sort of, you know, couldn't wait to hear what, you know, my smart friends thought about it because I suspected it would be close and people would end up on both sides of it. And that's exactly what happened. You know, you have Bob Baffert didn't think he should have been taken down. Plenty of other trainers did think he should. So, you know, it's not like there's a correct and an incorrect answer to this one. I think you have smart people on both sides of the opinion.
Now, it makes for a debate that obviously is gonna rage on. Beyond that, Steve, you know, quite a try certainly by maximum security. What else struck you in the race, and how many more of these wet track derbies are we going to have to endure? I'd like to get a dry fast track one of these years.
Yeah, that sure would be nice. I mean, that track does dry out really well, but it just the timing was unfortunate that the rain came exactly when it did. And, you know, you probably half the field didn't run their race as a result of it. Having said that, I didn't like Maximum Security at all. He deserved to win. He ran by far the best race. He got to the finish line first. He set a reasonable pace and drew off from horses, even once they caught up to him. So, you know, I don't think anyone can say that he wasn't the best horse on Saturday. He obviously was the best horse on Saturday. I mean, you saw the three-year-old poll the day afterwards. You had about 40 people voted for Maximum Security and two voted for Country House. The fact that Country House technically won the Kentucky Derby hasn't fooled anyone into thinking he's the best three-year-old in the country.
I agreed. And, you know, the one thing that's frustrating, you know, we're not going to get a Preakness rematch, which would go a long way to, I think, assuaging everybody. And you know, and frankly, I don't know if you want to discuss, you know, the way the steward stand handled things, Steve, but I really got the sense that the frustration on Gary West's part with this whole thing stemmed from, you know, being so summarily dismissed by the stewards afterward, when a half hour together on Saturday night would have probably been enough to get West to realize, ugh, I got taken down. And he's a serious horse player, Gary West. He's not somebody that doesn't get, he's been DQ'd before, probably for, you know, for big money. So he knows what that's like. And I think if they had spent some time with him, that would have been time well spent.
I agree with you completely. I mean, he said flat out, if my horse committed a foul, he deserves to come down. Doesn't matter, you know, whether it's my horse or somebody else's. I think that the crew of stewards you have there has a reputation for being haughty and uncommunicative. And I think that when you make a decision of this magnitude with the whole world watching, to then come down and say, well, we're going to make a statement, but we're not going to take any questions, is absolutely wrong. If ever stewards should have taken questions, it should have been in the wake of that race. And I think that was a very bad decision on their part. And you could kind of see, if you followed the press conference over the 24 hours, the press coverage, rather, in the 24 hours after the race, that what Gary West got progressively frustrated about was, you know, nobody will talk to me, nobody will explain to me exactly the sequence of events, because there were all these confusing factors. Who exactly claimed foul and for what? Why wasn't the inquiry sign posted? Et cetera, et cetera. I mean, there's no excuse for them not pushing the button or whatever it is they do to light up that inquiry sign the second the horse has crossed the wire. Obviously something had happened on the turn. That's what an inquiry is. You say we're going to inquire into what happened into the race. So I think they dropped the ball there, and they dropped it when they wouldn't talk to the press.
You know, yesterday I wasn't in the mood to talk the International Federation, rules, so forth. That's going to get plenty of examination, Steve. You got any feeling on that?
Yeah, I don't think that that's the answer either. I mean, people are contrasting the American and the so-called international rules, and they're both wrong. You can't say a foul is a foul, therefore every horse should come down, let's take down Secretariat from Belmont, you know, for a gate infraction. But this idea that the affected horse has to finish second in order to be put up is equally nuts. I mean, if the winner comes and knocks over a horse, you know, who then finishes third rather than second, the idea that you can't take him down because it doesn't elevate the proper horse to victory, I mean, to me, that's complete nonsense, too. I think that, you know what the best rule is? Hire good stewards, give them plenty of discretion, and live with their decisions.
I, again, completely agree. Did you play the two-day Grade 1 pick six?
No, I didn't. It was just too tough for me.
Wow.
I didn't have, you know, a focused enough opinion in races like the Oaks and the Derby. So I settled for one-day action and then got very lucky.
How about that? Well, overall, anything else from the Big Oaks Derby weekend that you came away with?
Oh, there was so much good racing. There were so many nice performances, you know, Mattioli and Mia Mischief. I mean, what a weekend Steve Asmussen had.
Yeah.
You know, so I think there's plenty of good stuff to look forward to. Mackenzie, you know, was very impressive. That race came up big. I think we're looking at an exceptionally good Met Mile coming up in the future. And, you know, other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, it was a great weekend of racing.
Steve Crest, always great, and boy, to have you and Andy, you know, mixing it up like this, it can't be beat. And your voices, as we tell you every time, you know, we get these occasions with you and Andy Beyer, how much we miss the regular missives from the two of you.
Well, thank you, and you know, it's horse racing. We've all seen this 100 times.
We'll see you at Belmont.
Oh yeah.
Steve Crist, everybody, and there you have it. Another dissatisfied with the outcome. And I we'll do this all week, and I'm going to keep the tally, and the tally is going to be close because every tally that is being kept, every online poll, Ray Pollock took a couple, and it's either 60-40 or 50-50. And that's what makes it great. That's why we love this. It's our game, right? Brad Cox and Mark Cassie in these next 40 minutes. Jolan, let's take our last break of the morning, all right? And we'll come back close out another busy recap of Derby Oaks weekend with Brad Cox. Talk about his two wins and Mark Cassie. And although he didn't win anything on the weekend, certainly need to hear from him regarding what he saw, what he feels, and what Tyler Gaffalione told him. Stay with us. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We shake them, shake
We're back at the races. 25 minutes into hour three. Mark Cassie is going to join us first, and then Brad Cox to close out the morning. And speaking of Mark Cassie, you think a little bit of Woodbine. And I do have to mention that the Jacques Cartier on Saturday, and Pink Lloyd back in the win column, makes his seven-year-old debut. The Old Forster gelding, now 17 for 22. Unbelievable. And, of course, he won the Jacques Cartier last year. He may have won it the last couple of years. Unbelievable. Bob Tiller's running son of a gun, and went off favored in his seasonal debut. And, you know, might not be campaigned as aggressively this year, you know, with the advancing age. He tailed off a little bit, obviously, at the end of 2018, the Bold Venture and in the Overskate in September and October before getting the winter off. And Mark Cassie joins us. Mark, how many times has Pink Lloyd beaten one of yours?
Oh, I don't even know. But he's a nice horse, and he got us again the other day. So that's good for him.
Yeah. 7 years old, and he'll be on the sprint scene. And Mark, obviously, this is going to be a Derby that is going to go down in history. They all do, but this one a little bit more pronounced after really a harrowing circumstance. And we had, you know, we had a horse trip and fall in the Oaks on Friday. That's been kind of glossed over in the aftermath of Derby. And, you know, with all the discussion I had yesterday, in fact, with Tom Amos about Serengeti Empress riding the ship coming out of the Fairgrounds Oaks, you did as equally a brilliant job preparing War of Will. And you were equally confident and shrugged it off and went forward, and he delivered. The incident, notwithstanding that, you know, ended up putting him a little further down the chart, but he ran just like you said he would.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate that, Steve. Were you able to see? I sent you some pictures. I wondered if you were able to see them.
I did, and I've got, you know, and I've got the sequence also on two or three different video sequences. Mm-hmm. And
I want to tell you what I did.
Yes.
Took the NBC feed. I put it on my computer, and I ran it frame by frame. And what everybody's failing to mention or to know, and I've kind of sat there and I've bit my tongue, but I'm not going to bite it anymore. So Maximum Security not only got us once, but he got us twice.
I said that this morning online, actually.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
in the stretch.
I sent you a sequence. I wish everybody could see it, but I'll explain it to you as we go. Going to the half-mile pole, Maximum Security is right on the rail. War of Will is right behind him. So what I did, Steve, was it's a five. I took this off of YouTube. It's a five minute and 20-second video of the Kentucky Derby run right before they go into the gate. It's part aerial, it's a little bit of everything. But if you start at 157, that's just going into the turn, and Maximum Security is right on the rail, and War of Will is right behind him. At 158, Maximum Security is now starting to come off the rail. You can see maybe not quite a total length in between, you know, a body side to side. But he's now come off the rail. You can see, because you can see tracks in the
right
in the thing. And you can almost see where War of Will's head is just to the left of Maximum Security's. Well, when you're looking at it, his head is off to the right hind of Maximum Security. You then go to 159, and now Maximum Security has moved more than one path out. This is now, and this is, I'm not talking about the main event. I'm talking about prior to it. And so now we're stuck there behind him. If you go to
2 minutes. Maximum Security has now went from being inside the big track to the outside of the track. He has now carried us out. Our head is on the outside of him. And this is where what happens, our horse actually comes out and brushes with
Toddy.
I think it was Long. Yeah, Toddy. So that's at two minutes. At 2:01, Maximum Security now begins to head back in.
Yes.
He's now on top of the track. At 2:02, he's now inside the track. He's left us out. We're now on top of the track. We have bumped a little bit with Toddy. And now at 2:03, Maximum Security is back on the rail. At 2:04, he's still on the rail. And at 2:05, he now begins to come
Correct.
Out again.
Yes.
He's went all the way to the rail. He's come back out. It'd be like following a drunk driver. How do you know which way to go? At 2:06, he's now back out on the track. And at 2:07 is when we start running into the back of him. I've heard it mentioned that Tyler ran into or caused some of this. It's just absolute, I'm not going to say a bad word, so I'm going to use baloney. If you watch, and I only got to analyze this last night, but twice, Maximum Security went in and out. Nobody said anything from the half-mile pole, but, and I'm a little bit, you know what, I ride Lewis, and I would hope that he would have better control over his horse than what he did, but it makes you wonder if, it's like I said, it's like a drunk driver riding up in front of you going back and forth. It's a little hard to make a decision when you're going 40 miles an hour in the mud which direction to go. So anybody that wants to take shots at Tyler, that's very, very disturbing to me. I've heard a lot of things go on and a lot of people, but I haven't heard many people say about how badly this hurt War of Will. And then I'm going to go on record as saying this. I don't know what would have happened if War of Will had a clear trip. Only God knows. And I know there's a few experts out there that think they're God, but I'm not so sure. So to sit there and say it cost him a length, it cost him two lengths, that's just asinine. Who knows?
When you said
as
twice.
As you can tell, Steve, I you know what? I've taken it. I took it, but now it's begun. It's beyond ridiculous, and I'm not going to take it anymore. I sat there. I tried to handle it. I've been doing this. I've been wanting to win the Kentucky Derby since I was 10 years old. I'm now 58, and maybe one of the best shots that I ever had to win the Kentucky Derby was on Saturday. I feel terrible for Gary Barber. Nobody knows, what Gary Barber has put into this game.
You bet.
And he never had a chance. So I'm tired, and I don't want to hear the whining from everybody else. Okay? This was an absolute foul. There is no question that the horse should have come down, and nobody knows what would have happened if we had a clear trip. So unless you're God, I don't want to hear from you.
I'll add further. I'm surprised, and I mentioned this on Twitter at some point this morning. I'm a little surprised. You know, watch. I've got that same five-minute video, Mark. Watch from 2:20 to 2:30 because he comes out in your path mid-stretch between the eighth pole and the 16th pole, and to me that portion of the race is also critical, and nobody has said one word about it.
Nobody said anything, and I understand. We all focused on one deal, and one deal only, and that was the main event, I'll call it. But there were a lot of there were a lot of things that happened prior and after. I mean, I'm so proud of our horse because through it all, he kept fighting. He kept fighting. And, you know, the one hole probably ended up being his demise because,
sure,
one, we had to, you know, Tyler had to hustle him away from there. So he had to get him cranked up. And when he got him cranked up, he didn't relax as well as we would have liked. I mean, at any point in time, I think if he could have got opening down the backside, him and Maximum Security would have went at it at that point in time.
Yes.
But again, Maximum Security was going left and right up. You know, it's not easy to do. So, anyways, as you can tell, I'm not biting my lip any longer. So,
well,
we
you
go.
Were, and certainly Saturday evening, you know, you were gracious as can be, you know, saying, why should we claim foul? I mean, what in the immediate aftermath? I mean, did you think about either a trainer's claim, or did you wonder why Tyler hadn't?
Well,
claimed?
Well, look, I don't have any problem. I've done trainer's claims before. I don't have a problem with that. One, you know, we're asked to make a split decision with, you know, I'm seeing things that I mean, I watched from the paddock, you know, on TV.
Yeah, on the big screen, yeah.
So it's very difficult to know what happened. The only thing that I knew, and Tyler and I met, we had finished eighth, right? If we had finished anywhere close where it would have meant money to Gary Barber. I mean, look, it's my job to do the best I can do for Gary Barber. That is my job. It doesn't matter whether my best friend wins the race and my second best friend is second. If they bother me and I can get more money for my owner, and that's what my job is to do, Gary Barber, my job is to do the best I can do for Gary Barber, I would claim foul in a second. It would, but we finished eighth. I know they only played a fifth at Churchill in the Kentucky Derby. So, no, I wasn't going to claim foul. There was no reason for it because it would not change anything for Gary Barber. So, no, I did not claim foul. And I told Tyler there was no need to.
The way in which he prepared for this, I mean, he touted himself, Mark, leading in, and you know, all of us were watching upstairs during the training, and you know, it was obvious that the physical issue was well behind him. That became evident while you were still over at Keeneland, and you know, then when he got to Churchill and the way he galloped into the race, I think this does get filed under the same category as looking at Lucky and his one hole problem that you know, subsequently I think everybody agreed he would have been a much bigger force in the Derby had he drawn a palatable number. You're going to continue on, obviously, and run back in 2 weeks. Some thoughts going into Baltimore.
Well, first I want to say I just want to thank our entire team led by David Carroll, because you know, after Louisiana Derby, you know, we had to do some catching up, and we had to do, you know, yet again, we learned that with Classic Empire, and here we were behind the eight ball again. And it is my feeling, I'm very proud. I think we brought the horse to the Kentucky Derby. Our team did as good as anybody could ever ask. He was ready. He was on his game. Of course, it started when we drew the one hole. That didn't help. And then all these things in between. So I'm extremely proud of him. And like I said, after the race, I'm just happy to have him in one piece, because if he goes down, that could have been, horse racing could have went down. And who knows how many horses and how many riders could have been hurt, possibly even killed. So I'm good with all that, and I'm fine. I understand horse racing, Steve. I understand it. I don't appreciate the shots at Tyler. I don't. And I think, you know, our horse ran a great race. I think that I do believe that Louis could have done a better job of keeping his horse in a straight line. I didn't say that before, but now what I've seen after watching and reviewing films and tapes, I do believe that. As far as the Preakness goes, we're going to, you know, we've said we're going to go. Obviously, a lot of it depends on this week. We want to make sure, you know, how much it took out of him. And but if everything's good, we plan to be there next Saturday or week from Saturday.
Excellent. And let's touch on a couple while we're together, because not only did War of Will run well, you had a couple of other performances that might have been missed by people. Wasn't missed by me when it came to Got Stormy, who I liked enough to use prominently on Saturday. Talk a little bit about the good effort in the distaff.
I was proud of Got Stormy. She's kind of brought her game to a new level now as a four-year-old. She's shown she can run with the best. Probably would prefer a little harder ground, but ran a great race. We're going to try to follow in the footsteps of Teppan, and we'll probably see us Belmont Day in the Just a Game.
Excellent. And also, Dream Maker continues to kind of have a good race, bad race pattern. And he was third behind the big performance of Mr. Money and Vicky Foley's Hot Creek Hustle, but nice board hit in the mile for Dream Maker.
Yeah, he ran okay. Of course, yeah. Again, he causes his own trouble. He didn't break great, then he got, there is lots of potential there. Hopefully someday we'll get to see it, but I don't know.
It's one of those things that
that remains to be seen. He's
enigmatic.
He's a tough one. Yeah, he's a tough one to figure out.
Also, I want to throw in the Friday action, because Chocolate Kisses, we kind of thought that there was a look to her, Mark, to maybe close into what we expected to be a collapsing pace. The pace was fast early, but by the time anybody started to run from the back of the pack, Serengeti Empress had throttled them.
Well, I was excited, you know. I've always liked Serengeti Empress a lot, and I was happy for Tom. When she's right, she's really right. Chocolate Kisses ran okay. We're going to have to regroup there. She may just not be grade one level.
Well, plenty of opportunities for three-year-old fillies all over the place, and an opportunity coming up later this week, Real Money, for your two big clients together, Gary Barber and John Oxley, the Real Solution three-year-old. Tell us about, was that Thursday or Friday?
I think it's Thursday. Yeah, we gave him, he ran a few times, kind of just was knocking on the door. We brought him home, gave him a little break. He's training, good. So I would expect he would run well.
Well, and while we were at OBS, this was the $675,000 purchase, the Real Solution.
Yeah, he's a beautiful horse. He's had a few little issues. Hopefully we've got those behind us, and we'll find out on Thursday. But he's doing well. He should run well.
Excellent. Makes his debut. Mark, I'm glad you got that. Out, and I don't think anybody was being malicious in terms of discussing this incident and from any standpoint.
It's interesting. I wish everybody could see what I'm talking about, where you're going to see, because I honestly thought initially that maybe we came out a little bit and kind of side checked long range Toddy, And I didn't understand that the reason we did it, I'm talking about prior to the big event, we came out because we were trying to, you know, get room to make a run. Our horse was full of run.
Oh, yeah.
He was full of run. And I didn't realize until I looked at this angle and did just what I sent you, these pictures that showed just how much, you know, maximum security came out, not once, but twice. So, anyway, I'm not going to talk about it anymore. So, on to something else.
Well, I look forward to the Preakness and much more. Mark, I appreciate this.
Thanks for having me. Bye, Steve.
Not at all. Mark Cassie, everybody, and you can tell how much, you know, the anxiety that and, you know, the high level that, you know, what these races mean, what that means to the, you know, to the sets of connections, to the whole, you know, all the teams. Certainly Brad Cox can relate, and he joins us now after a very nice Derby Oaks weekend. Brad, good morning, and congratulations. Break even, unbelievable in the Eight Bells on Friday, and then Beau Recall, which is a really nice story, taking the distaff, and, of course, Mark second with Got Stormy behind you. Congratulations.
Good morning, Steve. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. Let's start with Friday, and it was the first stake of the 13 that were run over the weekend, and what a show. I sent out a tweet saying, one for the Ville. This was an all Louisville set of connections with you and the Kleins, very much a homebred by their own stallion, Country Day, who they're trying to make a stallion career. And this goes a long way. Break even, a breakout performance in the Eight Bells.
Yeah, it was a big victory for Richard Klein and his family, obviously being from Louisville and being a homebred through and through, without a doubt, top and bottom. And, you know, obviously, you know, I would call that the home track for the Klein family. So it was a big victory, and you know, they always like to participate on Oaks and Derby Day, and to get a victory. I believe last year Will Call was their first greatest stake victory on Oaks and Derby Day, and it came with a Country Day as well. So it was exciting stuff, and Philly's very talented. She showed it again on Friday, and she's very rapid, to say the least.
Well, she's 4-for-4, and now with the, you know, a second, a back-to-back, you know, mid-low 90s buyer, she's establishing herself as, you know, the top Philly sprinter in the country. You win this, and pretty much, I would imagine, her schedule writes itself going forward.
Yeah, I mean, you know, she put some distance between her and those fillies the other day. It was, you know, she just breaks so sharp, and she just has an advantage from the start. I mean, I think when she breaks, she just puts herself in front two or three, and it's catch me if you can. And she is going fast, but it's the way she's doing it. I mean, she's in the bridle. She's not running off. She's listening to what the rider wants and asking from her. And she's a very intelligent filly. She, you know, lots of times these sprinters, they're very high, you know, high energy keyed up fillies or colts. And she's not. She's very laid back around the barn and easy to gallop, not hard on herself, very push button of the mornings. She'll work a half and 50, and, you know, she'll do whatever you need her to do. I think that's what's going to ultimately, you know, keep her from being, I think, where she can take it to the next step, be a, you know, obviously a graded stake filly. And she's shown she's done. And, you know, she hopefully can knock out a grade one at some point in her career.
Well, we know where those grade ones are going to come. Certainly as three-year-olds, fillies, you're basically going to look at the test and work your way back.
Yeah, no doubt. I think that's the plan right now. We're going to nominate to the Acorn and the Jersey Girl at Belmont. One's obviously Belmont Day, and I believe the next one, the Jersey Girl, is the following day. It's on a Sunday. But if all's well, she did come out of the race in good shape. She went to the back to the track today, and she was moving well. So we'll work our way back from the test. And right now, that's what I think we're zeroing in on would be the Acorn or the Jersey Girl. Probably leaning a little bit more towards the Jersey Girl, but ultimately we'll nominate to both and just kind of see what comes up and how she's doing.
Well, I imagine. I mean, this was 7/8, of course, and the Acorn's a mile. What's the stretch out interest? I mean, you can certainly keep going short with her for as long as you want.
Well, like I said, the goal right now would be the test, and I feel like we just need one race moving forward between now and then.
Interesting.
I believe the test is in August, but there's also there's a 6.5 at Belmont as well, toward the end of the Belmont meet. I can't think of the name of the race, but that's something else we would look at as well. But right now, I'm kind of thinking, we'll keep her fresh and happy, and just one race between now and the test, and kind of go from there.
Very
good.
But
as far as to answer your question, I got off track a little bit.
Yeah, it's all right.
To answer your question, I could see her possibly getting a mile. I mean, it would have to be on the right track, the right, everything would have to set up right. But, yeah, I mean, I think the other day, I mean, if they were going another eighth of a mile, they wouldn't get into this filly. She responded well when Sean, cracked her a couple times inside the 16th pole and, started actually, I thought, kind of getting away from him again. So, if everything fell into place and there wasn't a lot of speed in the race, I think it's possible she could get a one-turn mile.
Well, that opportunity could come as early as Belmont Day with the Acorn. The Jersey Girl is 6, so you'd be shortening up for the Jersey Girl. Actually, that's right. It's
it's
6.
Three quarters. Yeah,
it's 6. Yeah. 6 furlongs. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And a mile for the Acorn. Well, that was on Friday, and in addition to Friday, before we talk about Saturday and Beau Recall, you should note that you tried to win back-to-back with Will Call, and that was going to be a tall task given World of Trouble and, his not just his ability, but his ability, Brad, on turf with some give to it. And last year, his Breeders' Cup effort against Stormy Liberal, I mean, was one for the ages, and he did basically the same thing on Friday.
Yeah, he's a nice horse. He's in a league of his own, really. We kind of knew that going in. But, our horse, we won the race last year, and our horse was doing really well as he's going to do. Just that horse, we're not going to beat him unless something gets in his way. So yeah. He's a very nice horse, and that was a savvy purchase last year, and it's been nothing but rewarding to the connections, and he's a very, very, very nice horse.
Turn to Saturday, and Beau Recall, and what a nice story! And I was laughing because I came to you in the winner's circle. I said, "Where's Nick? Where's Nick Cassano?" And he was, I guess, he was looking forward to the Senorita at Santa Anita because he didn't come out.
Yeah, he had a big weekend, a huge weekend.
Yes, he did.
But yeah, she's something. That little filly, and I say little, I mean it. I mean, she is nothing. There's not much to her at all.
No.
But she is a racehorse, and she looked amazing the other day in the paddock. It was it was a gloomy day. But I mean, she was still slick and coat looked great. She was just she's just thriving right now. She had a great winter at the fairgrounds, but I really feel like once she got to Kentucky, she really just took off. And just coat looks amazing. Her works have been really good, and she got a good setup the other day. Once again, I mean, there was some pace up front. They were strung out going down the backside. The 3S Poe, I read, started to kind of ask her to go, and I thought, if this filly gets to the outside and she didn't get stopped, I said she's gonna get a piece of this. And then it's the 3/16 bow when he really got after and got her lined out. I thought she can win this thing, and she didn't let us down. She's a nice filly, and she gives you what she's got every time. I think she's definitely the guys that are the ownership group that is connected with her. She's one of their favorites, and they talk about her all the time. And she's she is just a mighty little filly that gives you everything every time you lead her over there.
And, what's interesting is she's basically, at least from a figure standpoint, she's basically running the same, until this performance, she'd basically been running the same kind of races that she ran on the West Coast. Getting away from Basilica certainly, certainly helps. But this was a breakout performance. I mean, they got a triple digit, a 101 buyer, on the grass, and, really kind of sets her up for some, for some big opportunities.
Yeah, it does. And, this winter, I felt like, you know, she came to us from Southern California in great shape and condition. She looked great, and you know, she did well throughout the winter. But you know, she lost a race down there. Bill Mott had a nice filly that beat us one time, and she was able to win two other races. She just got past the filly of ours, two back and Sensitive, and she had to grind those wins out. And it wasn't as if she was winning by a large margin. So we thought, you know, she's going to have to step forward to be there on Saturday. And she did, like you said. And not only did she step forward, I think she was a length and a quarter clear at the wire. So, I mean, she did it the right way. And it wasn't like she just had her head down at the right time. She was a clear-cut winner. And, you know, just very proud of her and very happy for the connections that have stayed with her. You know, she was offered in the January sale as a broodmare racing prospect, and, you know, she didn't meet a reserve, so I'm very happy she did now. She's been very rewarding since, and she's, just a really nice filly to be around.
Well, we've got some lightning round. We got about 2.5, 3 minutes, so I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions. There's been some clamoring this morning to get an update on Monomoy Girl, and given that the Ogden Phipps is coming up, and I had Steve Asmussen talking about his fillies, and then what else? Who else came up? Bizou, Midnight Bizou came up with him as well. What's our status?
We're not going to be ready for the Ogden Phipps. No way. I mean, that we're not quite where we need to be as far as fitness or anything. But I was just a Windstar. We started back doing some stuff with her. Dustin Heath, that Windstar, the training manager, the trainer there at Windstar, has done a phenomenal job with her. I was actually just left the farm, took a few photos of her. She looks amazing. Her weight's great. She's recovered from the bout with colic and put on weight. I mean, it was a stressful situation for her. She didn't, you know, lose some weight and some muscle tone, and she's definitely recovering well, and she looks amazing. I've been over here once a week to check on her, sometimes twice, and she really, really looks well, and she's headed in the right direction. As far as a race, no clue. I don't know when we'll have a race ready. She'll be ready for a race, but as far as her physical well-being, she looks amazing, and I do think she's on the right track, and you will see her later this year in a race, if all goes well.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate the update. I got to ask you about Night Ops behind Laughing Fox in the Oakland Invitational, and of course Owendale getting ready for the Preakness, and the 10 Strike team and Sal Cumin, they're anxious about where Warriors Charge, who we saw when we were at Oakland, and where he's going to turn up next.
Well, Warriors Charge will point him for the Sir Barton at Pimlico. He's
nice.
Doing extremely well. He breezed really well this past weekend. He'll have another work and then fly to Pimlico next week. Same thing with Owendale. He's pointing for the Preakness. Very happy with the way he's training. His work this weekend was a really good breeze. He put his work made away fairly easy, galloped out well. The time wasn't super fast, but they did break off slow. That was more due to the workmate just being a little lazy. But galloped out extremely well. He's thriving right now. This horse is doing extremely well. I think his sheep numbers are really going to match up with these horses in the Preakness. I think he's right there with them. I think he's got a shot. I mean, you know, we're going to have a good setup and a good trip, and he could be right there. So I'm excited about him.
Arklow in the Man of War?
Yeah, we enter tomorrow. That's the plan right now. He's going to get on the plane and go to Belmont tomorrow, and we enter tomorrow. And he's doing well. This horse is really, you know, it's going to be a tough ass, a tall task. The mile and 3/8, grade one, off the layoff. The thing, obviously, the race at Keeneland didn't count, but it's off the layoff. But he's doing really well right now. This horse is moving well, and he had a nice work on the dirt 2 weeks ago. Had a nice work on the turf, and he's definitely ready to. Start his 2019 campaign.
The million-dollar question, leave him up or take him down?
Take him down. I hate to even comment on it, but I thought the right call was made.
Brad Cox, everybody. Brad Cox Racing, and another weekend.
And I'm a huge Luis Saez fan. I mean, he's one of my favorites, and I hate it, but I just thought it was the right call.
Well, so far, every trainer that's been on the last 2 days has agreed with the call.
Yeah,
It's just us horse players. It's just us nasty, annoying people that bet. We're not completely convinced. Brad,
you're
this
not
is great.
You keep the game going. You keep the game going.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, sir. Talk to you soon.
You got it. Brad Cox wrapping up a frenetic 3 hours. Mark Cassie, Brad Cox, Steve Asmussen, Jay Bribman, Andy Serling, Steve Grist, and John White. Replay tomorrow, 6 to 9. I forgot to ask Brad about his horse running today in Indiana. I was going to get you a winner, maybe. Maybe he's a winner anyway today. What was his name? The maiden, Dancing in Paradise in the 6th at Indiana. Talk to you tomorrow, everybody. Thanks.